Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello and welcome to episode number 92 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. News alert. Just before we start this episode, I've got a little bit of news for you. As you're aware, we've been running this podcast for a little over 2 years. And if you're a regular podcast listener, you may have been aware that this podcast hasn't got any adverts. Most have a couple at the start, in the middle, and the end of each episode. We took the decision just over 2 years ago not to do that. As a result, the financing, recording, editing, production and promotion has all been done by one person. And all of that work and financing has started to take a strain just a little bit. So we've started a Patreon page to try and drum up a little bit of support. And you can do that at the cost of as little as £3 a month, which, well, is pretty much a cup of coffee. There's several different tiers, starting from, as I just mentioned, £3 a month just to support the podcast. There's £5 a month to become a friend of the podcast. There's a VIP where you can get insights as to up-and-coming shows for £6.50 a month. For £15 a month, you can have your own little 20-minute episode over on Patreon. For £17.50 a month, you can get 3 small canvases that have been signed by or drawn on by the guests. And for £30 a month, you can have your very own bonus episode coming out just like this one you're listening to now, which will be aired on iTunes, Spotify, Google, everywhere. So please, if you're able, shoot over to Patreon and have a look. That's www.patreon, which is patreon.com/Ministry of Arts. So as I say, for the price of one cup of coffee per month, you can help these great conversations stay ad-free whilst helping the Ministry of Arts develop and grow. It'd be great if you could, but absolutely no problem if you can't. Either way, thanks for your time, and back to this week's episode. Sorry about that, but at least we've got it out of the way. But anyway, back to this week's episode, episode 92. This week I'm speaking to Abigail Fallis. I've known Abigail for a couple of years, and the intention initially was to record this summer before last, outside in the shadow of Abigail's permanent sculpture, which is situated on The Line, London, which is an art trail that stretches across East London and into South East London. But we talk about more of that in this episode. Abigail studied silversmithing and metalwork at Camberwell College of Art before moving down to Gloucester, where she now lives and works. Abigail was shown consistently across Britain, including solo shows at galleries including Bow Arts in Cork Street, the Trolley Gallery in London and Pangolin London. In 2009, a public sculpture by Abigail was installed in Newcastle upon Tyne's Fulford Square, the monumental 9-metre-high sculpture that I mentioned earlier. In 2008, she was the first sculptor in residence at Pangolin London, where she went on to have a solo show of her new works, entitled Phallus in Wonderland. How cool is that title? But I don't want to tell you too much of Abigail's story, so sit down, buckle up, and let me introduce you to Abigail Phallus.
Because I'm studying my teaching diploma, we were going on adult ADHD, I recognised that person. I recognise all those traits in myself, and it's like, I have got ADHD, along with 90% of the population nowadays. But you know, it's just you learn to work with it. I suppose it's worked for me to a degree. It works for me in my teaching role because I'm flitting from student to student, and you concentrate hard with that person for 10 minutes, then you've got to rush off to the next one. So in those circumstances, it suits me really well, and I can focus on each person very well, get on with, have a million conversations at once with different people, and it's all working. So for that, it's a benefit.
Well, you're saying about you've got traits of ADHD that you've noticed whilst working with the kids. We're of an age, I know we're similar age, that when we was at school, ADHD weren't heard of. It was just the kids who wouldn't shut up. And dyslexia, for instance, was just a kid in the corner who can't spell properly, wasn't it, you know? What is it doing your diploma in, your teaching diploma?
It is, I am teaching in blacksmithing and metalwork and silversmithing jewellery. So it's basically metalwork. But I want I work in a Steiner College, special ed Steiner College. It's phenomenal. It's like nowhere else, I'd say, because it's a craft-based, practical skills, therapeutic education college where our students come along and learn everything from caring for fish. We've got a big fish farm. And everything is biodynamic, through to pottery, art, up with me in the forge, and it's a forge up in the woodlands. So it's teaching them about concentration and working in the craft. The craft is the secondary, the primary and fundamental thing they are learning is about being in the environment. It's in a valley, it's in a forest, it's in the woods, it's on a farm. It's about living in the environment. For many of these kids, they've never left a tower block and a concrete environment. So you see the changes in months, and it's really beneficial. And it's the whole thing sort of the pedagogic educational environment, which I think a lot more places are taking on now. Yeah. So it's really sort of the pedagogy of craft and art and education. And it's learning. It's almost the fundamentals in education and teaching that. So if I was to label it, whatever I'm working in, so be it craft or art, I want to work in special education because you have less students and you have more time to dedicate to one person. It really benefits me as an artist and my practice. And I just am really, really interested in how the minds and brains work through education, especially, you know, I've got kids, my son's 8, my daughter's 13, and it's interesting to, it's, you know, my students are like, you can't be at college, you're too old, doing my teaching. And I'm like, lifelong learning. Like, it's like, it's the best thing. I love education. Just that, I will always be in it. Yeah.
And have you always been into metalwork?
I did my degree. I graduated in 1998. So where are we? Nearly 20 years ago?
Yeah, a millennia ago.
Yeah. So, and I was doing metalwork then. I've always been interested in sort of manipulation of materials. And a sort of metal is a good foundation. So you'd always use a metal in a maquette for a sculpture. You'd always use your chicken wire. And it's just developing it. And by working, you know, I just enjoy working in different materials from copper. I spent a lot of time working with bronze. Well, I wasn't really working with it. I was doing the the predecessor to the bronze, which is the wax, or in my case, it was fish bones, fish skeletons,
yeah,
coating them in wax, and then working with Pangolin Foundry based in Chalford in Gloucestershire, going through the process. So I left the making of the metal myself and was working on the structure more, and then now I've come back to the metal again. And although you look on my Instagram feed, you're not seeing much metal pieces in there. There's a lot of metal underneath things, but now I'm going to work on a sort of purely sort of, yeah, blacksmith handmade exhibition, which I'm hoping will be out next year. Knowing me, it'll be 2 years though. So yeah, or three.
Who knows?
They used to work for an artist called Lynn Chadwick, and his son's Daniel Chadwick, a good friend of mine. And Damien Hirst bought Lynn Chadwick's studio in Gloucester, in Chalford. And Pangolin are next door. It's a huge foundry. It's one of the biggest foundries in Europe. And I mean, it's so exciting to go there. So I did. I was obsessed with it for the time I was there. I'm really privileged to be able to work there. So I went and met Ronwy Kingdon, who's the owner of Pangolin. So I had just graduated from Camberwell in metalwork. I was quite a serious metalwork artist.
Obviously living in London. Sorry.
I was in London. And I can't remember where I'd met Dan Chadwick. Damien Hirst introduced him to me at some Brit art party. I'd met them all because I was also living in Devon. So I met Damien and Maya whilst I was living in Devon. I'd moved to my nan's flat in a little village called Coombe Martin. I'd spent all my Christmas.
Oh, well, I know Coombe Martin.
Yeah, so that's where Damien and Maya had moved to. So funnily enough, there you go. I spend all my time at art college and everything in London. Then I go to my nan's flat and bump into Damien and Maya in the pub in Coombe Martin. So yeah, we'd stay up late playing pool. And then I met Dan Chadwick through Damien, and Dan's friends were setting up BritArt.com. at the time, and I was saying, oh well, I'll put some metal sculptures in. They were like, no, they don't want anything like that. So I was like, well, what am I gonna do? And Dan said, do pants. Okay, so taking it quite literally, I went to this army and navy store called Cass's. Oh, it was such an amazing store. It's proper army, where you don't get all your clothes, and all the army gear was there. And there were trunks of Y-fronts. And as I walked in, there was just trunks of these Y-fronts, massive Y-fronts. I was like, they were like 20p each. So they were such amazing things. I hadn't seen any of these Y-fronts. So I was picking them up going, wow, look at, so I bought about 50 pairs. And
they must have thought, who's this nutter?
And I did a lot of embroidery and applique. I've always sort of done, you know, stitch things and various things. Always, yeah, use my hands and got sort of gone to quite three-dimensional with it. So I then started to applique all the front of these pants with the Union Jack on it. And
the British Isles. I remember
the British Isles. My name being Phallis was quite good. Phallis. So I had that embroidered on the waistband. I cut the back out of them and they looked fantastic. And I mounted them on red. But there was one point I had my mum and my aunt and my sisters and cousins, and we were all sat in this flat in Old Street stitching these pants. And my cousin's boyfriend came in, and he didn't know we were there, and they were having a massive argument. And he walked in to all these women stitching pants, going, oh, don't mind us, Arthur. Anyway, you're all fucking mad. Ironing the pants.
I want to get out of this family anyway.
So, yes. But the pants had a life of their own. They did brilliantly. So that was the irony with those, was that Brit Art came up and they were the top seller. So there were a lot of serious artists on that site. Tracy Emin, Damien, loads and loads. And my pants were the sellout. So after all my hard work and in my metalwork and Camberwell, very serious days, I then came out and flowered with the Y fronts. So that's how I came to fruition. So basically I'd made this 3D structure of a pair of Y fronts in silver, and I loved it. It was beautiful. It was a sculpture in its own right. And I had this vision of it sitting on a hill, so that you'd walk up to a big hill, a bit like Glastonbury Tor, and on the top would be this beautiful metal structure, which comprised of a huge hoop for the waistband and the two legs and then the Y joining them. So it's a minimalist sculpture on the top. But then from the other side of the valley, you see a giant pair of Y fronts on the hill. And Damien was interested. He was going to commission some. So he said, right, I want you to go to meet this guy at Pangolin in Gloucester. I'd never been to Stroud before. And that's when I met Runway, and I took him my wire maquette of my pants, and he was working for some really massive artist and cast it, and their eye rolled up with me wire fronts. But he loved them because he could see the sculpture element in them. It's a bit like the bananas I'm doing now. It's like there's I've taken a very fun thing in a dark time, and it's just a brilliant object. And it works, and it works in art. And as we know, when I was making these banana stacks for the kids over lockdown, I started to look at them. There's more to this than just, you know, a kid's jigsaw. These look good. And knowing, you know, how art works, and you on a grand scale, it's like this will work. And then at the time, then Catalan, Maurizio Catalan, pinned the banana to the wall, or taped, gaffer taped the banana to the wall, just as I was making my banana stacks. And it's like, that's perfect. And his piece was called Comedian, and he sold it for 120 grand at the Basel Art Fair. And I was just in love with it. And I'm like, that's so fantastic. And me, the comedian, because I definitely have the elements. Yeah. So I made mine. I was making all these. I just stuck one of the cardboard bananas, hand painted all of them, stuck one to the wall with gaffer tape. And it's like, oh my God, it looks amazing. And the kids were like, Mum, it's really good. And it's like, no, it's good, isn't it? That's great. Just one of those pieces that at the time I was making them, it all looked good. And so, of course, naturally, I called it comedian because it's perfect. So I think, you know, the bananas are my next big thing, really. I want to do them big. I want to make a really big sculpture, and you need humor. You need to sort of turn around a corner and there you see these giant bananas all stacked up, and the world's gone fucking bananas. We're all going bananas, and it's the new normal, isn't it? So it's like, okay, yeah, so from pants to bananas, there's always going to be a comic element in my life. But as talking about a big subject, because the pants are all about it was the you know, Blair's Britain, and everything was cool, and it was a really great time to be an artist, and there was loads of money about, and it was all, you know, spend it like Beckham. They were all the slogans of the time, but we also knew the underlying dark side of all of that.
It was all on credit.
Yeah, exactly. you could just buy houses, and
it's mad.
Yeah,
crazy. Hence and then the state crash. We're in at the moment.
Absolutely.
Have you always been into art? When was your first interest in art?
Really, since I was little, but I didn't come from any art backgrounds, and nobody in my family had been to art college or university or anything. So my dad was a mechanic. My mum was a teacher, nursery teacher, and she'd always keep things, you know, so it actually, I've got loads of these little impressions of when I was small, they were squeezing things in my hands. So I've always been obsessed with hands and the appendages, saying what would I do without these things? And so since a kid, I've always drawn, I've always drawn and sculpted. I've always sculpted. I've always loved clay, and it's therapeutic.
The instant,
it's always been in my life.
The making, the instant of the making.
Yeah. Like sort of performing and dressing up and entertaining. And so, yeah, there was that element, and that it then went into the art side.
And when was it you realised you wanted to be an artist?
I suppose when I decided to go to Waltham Forest College to do the Art Foundation when I was in my 20s. I sort of did it because I wasn't quite sure what to do. My boyfriend at the time was a really great artist, and I was doing a lot of drawing and stuff with him and life drawing classes. So it was then. And then from there, I went to Camberwell and moved to Camberwell and studied there for 3 years in silversmithing and metalwork and sculpture. And I think that course closed down. A lot of them closed down.
Which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection?
Gosh. DNA Dale 90, which sits on the Line Sculpture Trail, Art Line Art Trail, the Line London. that's one of my favourite pieces because it's had a life of its own. I made that in 2000 with a supermarket for a charity they were representing at the time, muscular dystrophy, and it was very poignant. It had been 50 years since the discovery of the DNA double helix by Crick and Watson and Rosalind Franklin. She didn't get the recognition, but she's sort of getting it now. But yeah, another rewriting of history. So it comprises 22 shopping trolleys arranged into the shape of a double helix. It's one rotation of a helix, so it's a single helix.
Yeah,
it's not a double because the double would be, it would be 20 meters high. It's 10 meters high. It sits on the, you can go and view it on the Line Art Trail. It's down at Coady Docks, deep east, near Stratford in London.
Which is, if you don't mind me interrupting, that's where we was going to record this originally, wasn't it, last summer?
Yeah, we must go down there. It's beautiful.
It's got to be done.
It's a really lovely spot. So I'd made it in 2003, I think, was the 50 years anniversary of the double helix, of the discovery of the double helix, which of course has revolutionized our lives and science and diagnosis of conditions and where it's brought us in medicine. And that's when I made it at the time, 2003. It's like everybody's had their hands on a shopping trolley. It was something that comes to hand. We're all familiar with. It's an iconic piece of design. It's everything about it. They're really great objects when you look at the shopping trolley. Yeah. So I'd always wanted to use this inner work of art. And so I worked with a supermarket at the time called Summerfield, and I sort of convinced the press officer that could we make a double helix from shopping trolleys, even though that supermarket didn't really use shopping trolleys. And he was like, that would be brilliant. So I made three. I made a tiny maquette, which was about 3 feet high. It's beautiful. Yeah. Stainless steel. All of the engineers, I contacted this company, one company called Vonsor, which is a German shopping trolley manufacturer, and spoke to the press officer there, and they said, yes, well, actually, we've got some miniature ones that all of the engineers have to make before they go into shopping trolley manufacturing and production. So they sent me them. They're absolutely beautiful little pieces. So this sculpture still exists. I can't believe nobody bought it. It's really unique, and it's stainless steel, and it's a really great piece. I'm kind of glad I do have that.
Oh, you've got it.
I've still got it. Yeah, nice. It's with Pangolin, and it sits on a stainless steel base, so it reflects itself all the way up. And so it was made as the original maquette to see how we're going to make the next size up. Yeah. Then I made a secondary one that was going to be the touring piece for the supermarket. They were going to take around various cities, and just that stood about 4 meters high. So that was still 22 miniature ones.
Yeah. And then not get shown outside a conference.
Yes, it did. Yeah. Yeah.
They were talking of DNA or something like that.
Yeah, they did. And Francis Crick and James Watson, the two scientists. James Watson, but he came along to cut the ribbon when it was in Newcastle. This is the big sculpture. And he said, it's only one rotation. It should be two for the double helix. So it's like, well, there you go, you know, maybe one day Storm King Sculpture Park in New York, just outside New York, we'll want to do the full double helix with shopping carts.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but so I was able to do that because of the supermarket. But as we know, you know, it's all down to funding and patrons and how to enable things to happen, which is why I love working in sort of industrial materials, that I can get quite far myself, cutting out the middlemen.
What is it you do to relax?
I walk. I'm not walking enough. I went for a walk with last weekend on the coast and to a beautiful lighthouse at Linton, and it's just so exhilarating. I used to do a lot of walking. You know, what do we do to relax in the days of COVID? It's walking. I love swimming. I'm not doing enough of that. I was drinking lots. I used to relax drinking, but I decided to knock it on the head a bit because...
You was relaxing a bit too much.
Lockdown, yeah. Drinking and eating in COVID was the best way to relax. As with most of the nation, I'd gained an extra couple of stone. So now what I'm doing to relax is getting that. I've lost most of it again, but bloody hell, it's hard. It's hard losing. Jesus, that was easy to put on in those 5 months. So yes, just try and stay healthy.
Abigail, if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
I've got Fiona Banner in my head. I'm loving her granite four stops she's been doing. She's a great artist. Another one, I love MC Llamas. MC's heads are great.
Have you seen her Polaroids?
Yes. Love the Polaroids.
I love MC. She's good stuff.
Yeah, she's great. I would like Rebecca Horn.
Yeah.
And Eva Hess. I'm running out of space, aren't I? What have I got? So we're doing the COVID dinner party, aren't we, of six? You're not allowed any more than six.
Excellent.
So I've actually run out because I'd like 12, but I've got two. What have I got? I've got Fiona. I've got MC. I've got Eva Hess. I've got, who else did I say? Rebecca Horn. God, I love Rebecca Horn. I'm going to bring a man into the mix. What's that one, two? I'm going to have David Smith.
Okay.
He's an iconic American sculptor. He started as a welder. I just adore his work. I can really relate to it. Who have I got? So there's...
Well, that is five, but you can have another one because of the group of six.
Well, then I'm going to have Andy Warhol as well.
Excellent. He's the most popular on here.
Is he?
Very much so.
I'm not having him. Okay, I would like Andy Warhol, but I'd also like, I'll have Max Ernst.
Okay.
I'll have Max Ernst. That's bad because I'm sure there's some contemporaries. And of course yourself, Gary.
I'm gate crushing. I'll leave a gate crush.
That's three men and three women.
I'll be on the door. I'll curate
it. You'll have
it.
To be the host.
Yeah, I'll curate it. And as you've just seen, your five today will be different tomorrow.
Yeah, it will. Because I've already thought, Dan Chadwick's mobiles are stunning. So he can be hiding up on the ceiling, and it's not until you look up, you go, and his that's what's so beautiful about his work. So he could get in there as well.
You are moving
There's
the
too many.
A bit too far.
So,
now.
But maybe I could. They could curate the show. Jane Simpson curated an amazing show, one of my favorites, and it was Daddy Pop with another friend who I'd have as well, Sarah Statton. Who's another artist?
Yeah.
Jane and Sarah curated a show, and it was all part of the Henry Moore Leeds Foundation. And it was called Daddy Pop, and it was your art father. And I loved it. I absolutely loved the context of the show. I've got the catalogue. And I was her studio assistant at Cubit Arts for a while.
Excellent.
So great respect for Jane Simpson.
Well, when I first started this, I did ask her then, which was like over 2 years ago, if she'd be on it. And there's a fair few artists that I asked and haven't actually got round to recording.
Yeah. Oh, she'll do it. You must. But I expect your list is extensive, like this dinner party, isn't it? So how do you get your funding and stuff? How do you keep this baby rolling?
Myself. Yeah, I bought the equipment. Yes, I just fund it myself. It's my time. I do it when I'm not working. But the thing is, Abigail, I love speaking to artists anyway, and this is my way of being able legitimately to use you for an hour, steal an hour off you, and I wouldn't have that opportunity otherwise with all of these artists that I've spoke to,
Because of course you're an artist, you're making your work, but
we
know how hard it is selling art as well. So
at the moment.
Sort of the consistency, isn't it, of having some cash coming in.
And now I'm...
Well, it is. It's a great thing to have as a, sort of when you're in isolation and to have that input. Your work's great. This is an amazing platform. Been listening to the going on the podcast, there's so many, which is why I would have thought that be interesting to see this on, because of your background, because of who you are. And I think that's why people open up to you as well, because you're not like the regular art critics, are you? And you've not got that background. And but for me, that's, it's your enthusiasm and passion which makes me want to do this with you, because it's interesting. Well, there's an amazing program. I've got to listen to it again. It's a leading QC who's worked in the prison service for 40 years. Is, I don't know if he's still in it, or, but he was saying, you know, how broken it is. And I've thought of you when they were talking about it. And it's just like, you know, it ain't working. The prison service ain't working. You can't expect people to go to prison and be rehabilitated. That doesn't work. And this is the thing that interests me with this whole pedagogical education. This does work. You give people a good environment, you give them materials, you give them respect, you give them good food. It's sort of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And all of these things I'm learning about, I didn't know. And it's like, God, it's so interesting. I didn't study psychology or sociology. I was English, art, photography. It's such an interesting subject. And, we, you know, the world is broken. We've got to fix it. So, it's, you know, that's why I think it's really interesting, your angle, where you're coming from. That we want to see more of you, and this is what you're saying and doing on the Sky Arts and stuff like that. So I think it's changing. I just think it's just a matter of time. You just, you know.
Well, funnily enough, this, when I changed the name, because this used to be called the Mizog Art Podcast.
Oh,
only
yes.
Because I was doing a lot of different things, I wanted to put them underneath one umbrella, and so I just come up with this name because I was doing some stuff with people in the city. So I thought our Ministry of Arts would be quite a good. But as soon as I changed the podcast over, my listenership went down 50%.
Right.
And I had people thinking that I was a government body.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I even had, there was this art group who was moaning about art funding, and they was including me in it, having a pop at me about, like, you know, their college not getting enough funding. And I contacted them. I said, look, Have a look at me. I'm this ex-prisoner, you know.
Oh my God. Well, there you go. It's still at those levels if people are associating that term. Yeah. So that's the thing, because actually the art world is still small. And, you know, you go, oh, so here you go. This is an interesting one. My daughter, she's at a grammar school. They had a debate in her school in the art class. They're saying there's absolutely no point to art galleries, and all you need to do nowadays is look on Wikipedia and download an image and copy it. So one of the girls said, well, I mean, it's just nonsense, isn't it? I went to an exhibition, it was just two pink planks leaning up against the wall with a pom-pom. And Beatrice went, but did you understand the context of the work? And did you look into the work? And they were like, oh, shut up. What are you? And it's just that you wouldn't have known that if you'd seen it in a photograph. And, well, what do you know about the artist that made the work? And she's bringing up all, because, of course, I've dragged her around art galleries all her life.
Course,
but it's such a great thing to do for kids. I love churches, supermarkets and art galleries. I see them all as the same thing.
I was about to say, they're all pretty similar, aren't they?
I love being, you know, when you've always lived in small houses, flats. You go to these spaces and you just, like, you can just walk around with the pipe music, or into the church with the beautiful music. I go to Gloucester Cathedral a lot, which isn't far.
One of my biggest posts, or the one that got most recognition I ever done, was I was going to Tate Modern, and I come out of St Paul's train station. And as I've come up, it was just getting dark. It was, you know, it's that beautiful light, the light hitting the top of St Paul's. So I took a picture of like the dome, you know, saying about this is where, you know, people go to sort of pray. And then as I'm walking across the wobbly bridge, I've took a picture of the Tate, and I said, well, where I go to pray is the one in front, you know. But that got that got forwarded, you know, and it sort of just takes a life of its own online, you know.
It does. It has, because it's not judgmental of the people going in. Anyone can go in, and you don't have to look at art in art galleries. I mean, what's the average? I remember there was now it will have changed, because this was a trial over 10 years ago, the Tate Modern, that the average person spends less than a minute with each artwork. It's going to be, it's like, well, no, two minutes then. Be interested to see what it is now.
And then they swipe left.
Yeah. My eyes have gone in lockdown because I've just been looking on my phone. But that's the great thing with the line art trail where I've got the trolleys are situated. It's that, and they're opening up at many riverways and putting art on them. That this is all free. You can, you know, get on your bike, go down there. And it's in Stratford, so it's in quite a poor area. And it's in Star Lane. So
it's just in between the two, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, but it's that thing of getting those kids to go down there. But there's a whole wildlife area at Cody Dock. So they are bringing a lot more school children in, and inclusiveness and multiculturalism, because a lot of these kids' parents would never dream. When have they got the time to go to a gallery? They work every hour, God send. So, but it's a new way of looking, you know, a new vision for many people still. And it's interesting. And it is that inclusiveness, and that people think, people still think, only, you know, certain people do art. And it's like, no, I do art.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you? And it's like, yeah. And then I show them out, and they're, oh, and you're quite good. And it's like, I'm really fucking good.
I'm not quite good. Well, that's why I like my, that's why I try to get my voice heard, is for that self-same reason. Because if they hear someone with a Cockney voice like this, effing and blinding, laughing and joking, I'm not the stereotypical white male middle-class 60-year-old artist.
But we both take art very seriously, don't we? It's our lives. Yeah. It changed your life. It's changed my life. It's stopped both of us from doing crimes, and it stopped, you know, I think it certainly stops me from getting depressed. There are times when I've can see myself, and then it's like, just go for a walk, go and make some work, just get some drawings down, go and get a piece of mud, and it changes. And I think working with very young depressed people, a lot of the youngsters I'm working with, the students I'm working with, you see them changing through therapeutic art and just using their hands and being in the moment. To be in the moment, we've lost the ability to look at things because it is all instantaneous. And I was blown away by Google Arts when I looked on that. It's like, look, I can be in the Taj Mahal. It is amazing. You can do that 3D thing, looking around.
Yeah.
From your living room, it is great. I love the 3D aspect, but it's almost like people say, well, you don't have to go anymore. Although to a degree, I agree with that as far as wildlife goes. I went to the Galapagos last spring, and it was a chance of a lifetime. And I did feel guilty being there. And I thought, why am I here? But to see the blue-footed boobies, to go and see the iguanas, to go and see the tortoises, to be in that environment. But I felt like I was imposing. But of course, that's the only way they're going to make money, is through the tourism. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? And actually, it's quite lucky because not many people can afford to go to the Galapagos. And, you know, speaking to people from Brazil and saying, you know, there's not much rainforest left in Brazil. Of course, there is. No, and they're saying these inner cities, we have people coming from Brazil to the college where I work, and they're saying it's very concrete jungles more so now, and sort of shanty towns that are happening.
Scary shit, isn't it?
And everyone's just encroaching because there's too many people now, and we're all we've got to change, and we can, and we can all live together. How long were you away for? What period?
1994 to 2001.
Wow. Yeah.
So 7 years out of the 14 that I got.
And were you doing art there? Were you studying art in prison?
That's where I discovered it. I didn't, you know, I'd never done art before.
Of course, because you said you wrote the letters, didn't you?
Wrote the letters. I'm sure Jane was one of them as well that I wrote.
She would have been. She was at that time. She was, you know, she was in the press of One to Watch, the Academy.
Out of 32 letters that I sent of the artists that I discovered that day, I got 28 replies back. Now that tells you something about an artist, doesn't it? Because Abby, I could have been a murdering rapist for all anyone knew. Do you know what I mean?
Did Marcus Harvey get back to you?
Marcus was one of the first. Of course,
I imagine he would with the Myra. He was this criminal.
Yeah, well, I knew three artists, and that was Myra. Marcus. I knew Marcus because I knew Marcus.
Seeing her whilst you're in prison.
I knew Marcus because of Myra, because that was in the papers. Yeah. I knew Damien because he was Damien.
Yeah.
I knew of, rather. And I knew of Tracy. And they were the only artists out of all of that group that I'd ever heard of. And so when I wrote to them, I had no idea if they was at the first rung of the ladder or near the top, you know.
Well, and of course, they were all both of those things, weren't
exactly.
they? Because it just took off so, yeah. well, the so first, fast.
The first letter I got back was Sarah Lucas and Angus Fairhurst. They was a couple at the time. So I got a joint letter.
Angus, yeah.
With two lots of books and catalogues and stuff. And Angus was the one that I become closest with when I got out. Because whenever we'd whenever I'd bump into him, he'd always asked if I'd go for a coffee or for a beer. And I didn't realise at the time that he was, you know, he was suffering himself.
No.
But we would sit and talk, and he'd just ask me about being in jail. And we would talk about mental health, you know, about how I used to help people in there. And that's because I was looking up to him. I wasn't really taking in what he was saying. I was just absorbing everything, but not really taking much notice of what he was saying. But so many times I bumped into him and we would just go and have a beer and a coffee. And it wouldn't be for like 10 minutes. It would be for like 2 hours, you know, just chatting.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah, Gavin was the second one to reply. Gavin Turk.
Good old Gavin, yeah. And Deborah, they're lovely.
And then it was whoever after that, but I know them two were the first. And then it was Marcus. Gary Hume was a massive one. He stayed, he'd send me bits and pieces throughout my sentence, you know.
Yeah.
They changed my fucking life, Abby, you know.
Yeah,
they
amazing.
They changed my life. And that's what I was saying.
They did. And you know, that's the thing. Go on, yeah, what you said.
I was about to say, I've got kids now that wouldn't be the children they are if it wasn't for these artists, because I'd still be the same person. But because of these artists who wrote to me and gave me a new lease of life, got good, caring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, my kids, I don't like to brag, but they are good kids. They do, you know, not that they're perfect kids. They're certainly naughty and whatever else. But they're, you know, you can take them places, you know. And it's because you teach them to see things.
Yeah.
And they,
yeah.
you know, you want to. But unfortunately now I'm struggling with the iPads with my son. But that's the next battle. But now I've got to spend more time with him because I've been so obsessed and busy. I know what it is. I've allowed him that time on the screen.
Of course.
It's like, no, I've not before. I've always given them so much time and spent so much time with them. And that's what makes a difference to a kid. You give a kid time and you listen to them and you talk to them. And you also, because of the lockdown, you know, before I always had my mom and my aunt around. They've both got conditions. They're elderly. They're in London. They can't come down anymore. They've not been able to see the kids. And I was speaking to Margot this morning and it hit me and it was just like I welled up and it's like, you know, I can't see my mum anymore. She comes over. She can sit in the garden. She's got a heart condition and rheumatoid arthritis. But they'd come
Same
and have the
mine.
Kids. They're obsessed with my kids. They love them. And they, you know, they spend
it's
so
got
much
to be
time.
As hard for them as it is for
Yeah.
For you,
so
you
now
know?
We've got to set up the Zooms and stuff and get them talking to them on Zoom. Because it is, you know, we might not like it, but this is a good medium. I'm sitting here talking to you now.
Exactly.
And it's like we're in the same room to a degree. It is, isn't it?
Mm.
So we know. I mean, of course it's not, but it's the best we're going to get. So you do have to make the most of it. And I think we are all we've got to start to adapt to a bit of wartime spirit, you know. We have
it makes
to
it a lot easier for me to do these podcasts, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I've done so much work in lockdown. It was brilliant. Oh, isn't it awful? I'm like, are you joking? The best days of my life.
talking of which, what would you do if you wasn't an artist?
Probably like a scrap yard. You can't get them now. I'd always dreamt I used to spend a lot of time in scrapyards. Of course, now it's all changed again because of the poisons in the environment. So everything's got to be sent off to here, there, wherever. Not a rubbish dump. I wouldn't want to be. It's not. I'm talking about an old school scrapyard with metal and good old metal. But it would be on the front of it would be a lavender farm. So you walk through the lavender farm up into the scrapyard.
That's
so
some juxtaposition,
like
isn't it?
The lavender and the scrap. And then I just adore lavender. I mean, I've got heaps of it. There's always lavender. My cousin trained in aromatherapy and she sort of heals you with various plant essences. And lavender's just been a winner for me. I absolutely adore it. I love the smell. I love the plants. And I'm not a very good gardener, but I can grow lavender. And it just pleases me so much.
Nice.
And all the bees are attracted to the lavender.
Well, I don't think
lavender honey.
I was going to say, sorry, I don't think there's going to be many people who will appreciate both areas of Lavender and Scrapyard. There's, yes. You know, there's going to be you and several other people who will appreciate both.
Yeah, yeah. So with all the gear that goes with the Scrapyard, you know, the things that lift the cars, the big magnetic, and all those really dangerous. You don't see them anymore. You can't go on to Scrapyards anymore. No. That all stopped, didn't it? I used to spend a lot of time in Scrapyards. So I think that was when I was living in Devon and I couldn't go to the galleries, and I'd sort of make my own version of a gallery, and I'd be spending they knew me, and they just let me walk around, and I'd just go and where's her wheelbarrow? She can go off. So I think some nature, and what if I wasn't doing, I'd put 2 days teaching. No more. When I teach, 3 days is pushing it. 4 days I turn really nasty. So you've sent me over the edge.
Yeah, full-time teacher, you're going to be a crank, aren't you?
Yeah, those 2 days it's okay, because it's like, and I come in and I say to them, so I don't start till Wednesday or something, and then I go, hi, morning, how was your weekend? And they all look at me and go, what are you talking about? It's Wednesday.
It's like, okay. Well, it wasn't 4 days long like yours.
It's just gonna go on and on forever.
Abby, what you got coming up?
Well, not much really. I mean, I'm trying to there's a big thing happening in Croatia, but it's with a hotel. It's a great space with a friend who's been asked to curate a show over there, and I've got quite a few existing works from my exhibition Phallus in Wonderland. So really well made pieces. I mean, I had to do recently, get all the costings, logistics and things. Yeah. And it's like, oh, crikey, there's actually 40 grand's worth of art here that I've got to send over. So these, I'm learning this now. It's all the logistics of art, just the packaging, because of course before it was the galleries that I was working with that did all of that side. You'd have an exhibition with the gallery, they'd pack it all up and send it off. Had it too easy, so now I'm just doing that. And my coursework, I'm on year two of my teaching diploma.
Excellent.
And that's really quite a lot of work. In fact, my first essay that I've got to do, a mind map, I love mind maps, I've got to do a mind map on the pedagogic education and its pros and cons, so I'm looking forward to writing that. And I'm doing MC contacted me about something.
The thing with MC, is that to do with the
collaboration?
I'm on that.
Who are you collaborating with?
Lee Ainsworth. We do the face value thing, you know, the exhibitions I was putting on.
Yeah.
Lee and I organise those. So, yeah, he's me art wife, as my other half calls him.
Right.
So Lee and I are collaborating on that.
Oh, good. I haven't decided yet who I'm going to collaborate. There's a few I've got in mind that I've got to approach. But I'm thinking about that. There's a big issue auction. Nice. So I'm preparing something for them, which will be, I think that's in November. Oh gosh, I don't know. I could, maybe it's not. And then Lee Sharrock, you know Lee Sharrock?
Yeah.
She's curator. She contacted, quite a lot of auctions going on at the moment. And then, but that's, it's more than I can handle right now, because with everything else going on, I know my capabilities, and I want to just sort of get this year done and dusted, because of course this time next, where are we, July, it will be finished. Then I have to do this sort of 3-month QTS thing, so I want to just be able to function, work along with that, kids, doing stuff with my children, getting them through school. There's a lot going on with them. Single parent, I've got a lot to do. There's a lot to do with them. My daughter's got a condition, so spend quite a lot of time in hospital with her doing stuff. So it's just, you give me two balls, I can't keep two balls in the air. So there you go. I'll tell you a great one I did, which was years ago for the Idler. Tom Hodgkins from the Idler contacted me, and it was called Absolute Art Holes, and it was sponsored by Absolute Vodka, and they wanted every artist to make an artwork. So I made this piece, and it was at the time of the pants. So I made this piece, and it was I got a male mannequin. I made this in my studio. Got a male mannequin, cut out his tummy, and then the balls, the golf balls, are painted to look like testicles. And then I put on a mannequin, female mannequin's hand was the tee.
Nice.
So you had to put the balls, the testicles in the female mannequin's hand. And then you had to whack the balls and get his balls to drop in the pants. And he had a pair of my Y-fronts, who was wearing my Y-fronts, live I can think of England. And you had to get the balls into the belly, totally doable, and get his balls to drop. And so the idea was to get two balls to drop.
Excellent.
And it went off to what's the big Glasgow festival, Tea in the Park.
Yeah.
And it was a huge hit at Tea in the Park, and it was in Covent Garden. But that was one of my finest works. And you know what I got paid? I think I got paid £100 on a bottle of vodka.
Oh, it's
from Absolut. That was and then you know, as you send it off, you went, oh my God, that's so good. I wonder what happened to it. And you had to sort of sign it off to them. Of course, time has passed. I think I probably own that artwork again. But
mind you, both of those would come in handy over lockdown, wouldn't they? The
£100 and they would.
The bottle of vodka.
And getting their balls to drop. Yeah, and that in the back garden, doing your little...
Abigail, where can anyone see your work, be it online or social media?
Social media, just look my name, Abigail Fallis. It's on ArtNet and Google Me and Pangolin London and where else. I'll tell you what I've got coming up, but again, in my own time, I don't know. We're hoping, we've got to get funding. I need Arts Council funding or sort of some funding. It's a big project. It's a big outdoor project, and it's involving shopping trolleys, but local craftsmen in Somerset. It's very exciting, and schools, but of course it can be social distancing. Everything you do now has to bear that in mind. So that's coming up with what was formerly the Bruton Art Fair. With her about doing stuff, and this particular project. And then can see my work on The Line, which is my amazing sculpture, the double helix. And Instagram is the latest platform, isn't it, we're all using? And I'm thinking of setting up a Shopify shop, but I was looking at that today whilst I was waiting to get onto the Art Car Boot Fair, and I'm just not very good with these things, so I'll probably have to get my daughter to help me with that. But I think I want to do an art shop, because now sort of I'm seeing galleries are closing left, right and center. And I think we're back in a time where we are doing it for ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's good.
I've not seen.
Well, there's Etsy, but I think a lot of my work is the costs are very high. You see, that's the other thing. You've always got to be quite true and political, which hasn't really helped me within the art world, in that I've got pieces up for sort of six of this trolley. I don't know what it was up for, sort of 60 grand. The most expensive piece I've ever sold was one of my fish. 18,000. So I've got pieces like the head, various other ones. There's ones higher than that. And yet now I want to make affordable art, but I still am making these pieces at £100 that I've been selling today on Art Car Boot. I wanted everything to be I wanted to do my own sort of pound shop gallery. So I wanted everything to be within that figure. Yeah, so it's £100. You know, I know myself that actually, oh crikey, I've not got £100 spare this month. I couldn't buy that, you know. But what I do is, but what I always did, what I loved about the Art Car Boot, I'd go around, I could swap one of Gavin's books for one of my pieces, and I'd do loads of swapping. So I'd come back with a booty of art that I'd swapped at the end of the day. So, and also good for Christmas presents and stuff like that. So I like to keep it really affordable. But know that I'm also in the high end of art selling as well. But it's just clearly not selling enough.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Because you can't have them bleeding into each other, can you?
Yeah. So someone said, I know that you can't do Etsy for that reason, because your work's going to always be higher than what people will be spending on Etsy.
Yeah.
So I want some. That's why I was looking on Shopify, and it sort of says between £0 to £5 grand. So I'm sort of going in at that, but you can always up it if I'm putting a trolley sculpture in there. I can put that on as well, sort of thing. So
High, going back to where you was just saying about funding, what's the limit of funding you can get from like lottery funding and or ACE funding? Is it endless?
It's endless, but you know, that's the whole thing why as well I'm doing this diploma, because it's a degree level in teaching, is to know, you know, once I have that, and I know I'm teaching, but they sort of want to see the qualifications, you're open to a lot more if yeah. you're bringing community, and you have, you know, I've got experience. I've been working in education again yeah. for 10 years. So all of that, the more you're linking to education, community, inclusion, all of this, you've got to tick all the boxes.
And just in the process of requiring it, putting a big installation together, which is going to be about 50 to 60 grand. This one's a bit bigger, and this is to do with like a changing of a law. And I'm hoping that, you know, that I'll get it from that.
What the exhibition is about, the subject of a changing of a law.
Pretty much.
This is why you've got to listen to this. I'll track it down for you. This guy that's saying it's so broken, and he's now starting to fight against it, and he always went with it.
Right, Abigail, that's all my questions asked. Thank you so much for your time.
You too. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
See you later, okay. Darling. Bye-bye.
Right, see you later. You. Bye. Thank you. I'm going to press stop.
Oh man, I know I say this at the end of most podcasts, but I absolutely loved recording this one. You know when an artist says their favourite piece of work is the one they've just finished? Well, I pretty much feel like that with these podcasts. And what I love about Abigail is, not only is she extremely passionate about her own work and craft of blacksmithing, but the fact that she so readily wants to pass that on to other people. As I think we mentioned on here, she's a regular at the Art Car Boot Fair, where she was selling those banana sculptures called Comedienne that she mentioned. You can go and see them for yourself over on her Instagram page, which is Abigail Fallis Art. Give her a like and say hello and a follow if you're not already. So, like I say every week, on whichever platform you're listening to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. And if you could do that, that really would help us get noticed and anybody else looking for an art podcast. So, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.